We'll continue on this Mahatangasakhe Sutta, the creator discourse on the destruction of craving. So we did a few pages last time. We did up to this number 21. That's now we start with number 22, paragraph number 22, recapitulation of cessation today. Good bhikkhu, so you say thus, and I also say thus, when this does not exist, that does not come to be. With the cessation of this, that ceases. That is, with the cessation of ignorance, comes cessation of formations. With the cessation of formations, cessation of consciousness. With the cessation of consciousness, cessation of mentality, materiality. With the cessation of mentality, materiality, cessation of the sixfold ways. With the cessation of sixfold ways, cessation of contact. With the cessation of contact, cessation of feeling. With the cessation of feeling, cessation of craving. With the cessation of craving, cessation of clinging. With the cessation of clinging, cessation of being. With the cessation of being, cessation of birth. With the cessation of birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. So, we discussed this part in greater details last week, that this is the paticca-samuppada, the dependent origination. So, what they are saying, that if there is no ignorance, then there won't be any formations, volitional formations. When there is no volitional formations, there won't be any consciousness, because the volitional formation is the one that constructs the consciousness. So the constructor is not there, though no longer it is constructing the consciousness. When there is no consciousness, there is no name and form, or the mentality and materiality, so the mental content won't be constructed either. Since there is no mentality materiality, so there won't be any sixfold basis that it won't go into those eye, ear, nose, tongue, body sort of basis won't be activated. And since there is no such activation, there won't be any contact. Since there is no contact, there won't be any feeling. Since there is no feeling, then there won't be any craving either. So with the cessation of feeling, the craving ceases. Since there is no craving, there won't be clinging. So, since there is no clinging, there won't be any existence of such craving. And so, since there is no existence, there won't be birth. So, that's the cessation of whole mass of suffering. So, the next part is the personal knowledge. Bhikkhu, knowing and seeing in this way, would you run back to the past? Thus, were we in the past? Were we not in the past? What were we in the past? How were we in the past? Having been what? What did we come in the past? No venerable sir. So here Buddha does not mean that that you don't have a childhood or anything like that. And you know, if you say I was not there as a child, then you don't have a father, mother, teacher or anyone like that. It does not mean anything like that over here. What it means is that the whatever thing arises, they arises with these conditions, the dependently arising. When there is some sort of a condition, that it come to exist. Knowing and seeing in this, say, would you run forward to the future? Thus, shall we be in the future? Shall we not be in the future? What shall we be in the future? So, like that, when the conditions exist, then there will be such and such thing. If the condition ceases, there won't be such thing. How shall we be in the future? Having been what? What shall we become in the future? No, venerable sir. Knowing and seeing this way, would you now be inwardly perplexed about the present? Thus, am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? Where will it go? No, venerable sir. So, even the present, the same thing, same condition. Because knowing and seeing in this way, would you speak thus? The teacher is respected by us. We speak as we do out of respect for the teacher. No, venerable sir. Knowing and seeing in this way, would you speak thus? The recluse say this, and we speak thus, at the bidding of the recluse. No, venerable sir. Knowing and seeing in this way, would you acknowledge another teacher? No, venerable sir. Knowing and seeing in this way, would you return to the observances, tumultuous debates, and auspicious signs of ordinary recluses and Brahmins, taking them as the core of the holy life. No, Venerable Sir, do you speak only of what you have known, seen, and understood for yourself? Yes, Venerable Sir. So they, those bhikkhu who understood the dependent origination, they understand what Buddha is saying over here. If someone does not know it, then it's just a mere reading and sort of understanding. Good bhikkhu, so you have been guided by me with this Dhamma, which is visible here and now, immediately effective, inviting inspection, onward leading, to be experienced by the wise for themselves. For it was with reference to this that it has been said, bhikkhu, this Dhamma is visible here and now, immediate, effective, inviting inspection, onward learning, leading, to be experienced by the wise and themselves. So, this is this the meaning of the Svakkhato Bhagavata Dhamma, that's Gata, meaning here, that this Dhamma can be invited anyone to come and see, because that if you see the condition that these, because of the ignorance that the volitional formations, we do these sort of things because of the ignorance. If you some understand, you can invite anyone to come and see, think about it. And nothing hidden over here. And only the experience by the wise. This Dhamma is so deep, it's not that easy for normal people to understand. And the round of existence, conception to maturity. Bhikkhu, the descent of the embryo, takes place through the union of three things. Here, there is the union of the mother and father. But the mother is not in season. And the Gandhabha is not present. So there should be three things. Father, mother and the Gandhabha. Gandhabha is the one that was to be born. In this case, no descent of embryo takes place. Here, there is the union of the mother and father. And the mother is in season. But the Gandhabha is not present. In this case too, no descent of the embryo takes place. But when there is the union of the mother and father, and the mother is in season, and the Gandhabha is present, through the union of these three things, the descent of the embryo takes place. So Buddha set out the condition. Only way to have the human being or whatever being is the way that these three conditions should be there. The mother then carries the embryo in her womb for 9 or 10 months. With much anxiety, as a heavy burden. Then at the end of 9 or 10 months, the mother gives birth with much anxiety, as a heavy burden. Then when the child is born, she nourishes it with her own blood. For the mother's breast milk is called blood in the noble discipline. So mother's milk is the blood. So you can see that Buddha set out the conditions over here that how the mother suffering and actually the child is suffering as well inside that 9 months, 10 months over there. And think of it that how many such births we have in the past, many eons, many times. So we are get stuck, and think about the place that we'll be get stuck in that 6-10 months or period. If you count them together, you can see it is that eons and eons we have been inside the mother's stomach. When he grows up, his faculties mature. The child plays at such games as toy plow, tip cat, somersault, toy windmills, toy measures, toy cars, and toy bow and arrow. When he grows up, his faculties mature. Still further, the youth enjoys himself, provided and endowed with 5 courts of sensual pleasure. With forms cognizable by the eye, sound cognizable by the ear, odors cognizable by the nose, flavors cognizable by the tongue, tangible cognizable by the body, that are wished for, desired, agreeable and likable, connected with sensual desire and provocative of lust. So, now the baby start playing, and then baby become, the youth, and then go into the sensual places. That's what is happening to us, every one of us. On seeing a form with the eye, he lusts after it if it is pleasing. He dislikes it if it is unpleasing. He abides with the mindfulness of the body unestablished with a limited mind, and he does not understand as it actually is the deliverance of mind and deliver us by wisdom, wherein those evil, unwholesome states cease without remainder. And this is very important as well. It is that if we see something delightful, pleasing, then he lusts for that one. I want it. If he sees something displeasing, then there's this anger, unpleasing thing. So dislike grows. So this in Pali, pirupe rupe sarajyati apirupe rupe vyapajyati. Vyapada, anger, ill will. Now, the anupattita kaya satyicha vire, that means the mindfulness of the body unestablished. Mindfulness of the body, Buddha said. So, there are four mindfulness. Mindfulness as regards body, mindfulness as regards feeling, mindfulness as regards thoughts, and mindfulness as regards doctrine. Four foundations of mindfulness. Now, Buddha said that he hasn't got mindfulness as regards body. If someone hasn't got the mindfulness regards body, then his mind is limited. He can't see further than whatever the object that you see is the object that you see, and the mind takes over in that particular instance. But if the mindfulness of the body established, that if you see a person or someone or maybe food, and if you see the foul nature of that one, now this is as if we talk about the person, that then we think about the 32 parts of the body, for example, that this hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, flesh and all those things, down to excrement and the urine and all those liquid parts, then you see that foul nature. So when you see that one, then the mindfulness as regarding the body get established. If it is not there, then we are in limited mind. We grasp that object and go with it. So, limited mind, and he does not understand the actual is the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom. This is this Pajnavimukti and Chetovimukti in Pali. So, that's this one would liberated by wisdom or by the concentrations, one would get liberated. So, when one get liberated, this wholesome, unwholesome states, evil unwholesome states cease. Otherwise, they are there. So, when we are in a limited mind, we are always down. We don't see those things. We don't see the liberations. We don't think about liberations. If someone knows that only by these states that they cease, that one can actually see this one by practicing, by doing the meditation. So, one would go into the first jhana concentration, which is rapturous. And you don't have the sensual desire, the anger, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry and doubt, those five are not there. Then one's mind, you can see that this state is really good because I don't feel any, I'm not burning from lust or anger or anything like that. So one can actually first, Buddha said, if someone go to a jhana, says first absorption, then he can sort of touches the nibbana in a sense. Because he reached that one, then he can see this one. Now you can compare a person who is sort of normally angry, let's say yourself that you are angry, and another time that you are not angry, so pleasant and happy sort of thing. And then if you compare those two states, you can see, well, I was angry and it was really bad for me. Now I'm not angry and I feel really good. So likewise, when all these things ceases, the sensual desire and in the ill will, sloth and torpor, the restlessness and worry and doubt, all those things cease or suppressed at that time, you feel really good. So that's the time that one would be in an unlimited mind. Otherwise, they are in limited mind. Engage as he in favoring and opposing. Anurodha virodha samapanna. So that is that either I like it, so I favor it, I don't like it, so I oppose it. Whatever feeling he feels, whether pleasant or painful or neither painful nor pleasant. So there are three kind of feeling over here. He delights in that feeling. See, that's one would sort of straight away think, am I delighting in the painful feeling? Yes, we are. why we have the painful feeling? Painful feeling is the cessation of the pleasurable feeling. When the pleasure ceases, we get the pain, right? So since we like the pleasure, when we get the pain, we cling for the pleasure. I want to go back to the pleasure one. That's what I want. So when I get the pain again, I'm clinging to the pleasure. So in the equanimity state also, you are going back to the same thing. He delights in that feeling, welcomes it and remain holding to it. And the Pali word over here is the Vedana Abhinandati Abhivadati Ajosaya Tittati. And this is a very important three words. We use in the meditation quite a lot, these three words. That is, one delights in feeling and welcomes it. So I got, let's say I have some sort of a food that I have eaten, and then I got the delight about that food, right? I delight about that one and I welcomes it. How do I welcome it? I actually tell others, you know, that this food is really tasty. You should taste it as well. So my welcoming is like that one. So I grab the other people into the same thing, welcoming it, you know? And remain holding to it. The next time also I want to have that food. Next time also, you know, I welcome, I also want to have that food. And similarly, that the other example is the TV, you know, that one welcoming about the TV picture. So you first, the seek delight. How do I seek delight? I go and switch on the TV. So then TV, some sort of picture is going. I'm not happy, so I change the channel. Until I get the pleasure, I do that. So when you get that pleasure, so I seek delight. And now though the picture is going, I'm happy, then I welcome it. So I will call the others as well. Come on, there's a nice picture over here. So welcoming it. And then remain whole into it. The next week, the same time, same channel. Switch on and do that. And so become addicted to it. So that is the remain whole into it. So
forget the being in the present, forgetting the past. Isn't that kind of selfish?
Well, that is leading to a big discussion on its own. Mm. You are okay to go to fast for the purpose of analyzing it. You see that if you think about the matter, feeling, perception, original formation and consciousness, Buddha asks us to analyze that one in 11 ways. Past, present, future. The close by and then the far away and so on. So over there what Buddha is saying, that you need to go to the past. What I have at this moment is the 5 aggregates. In the past also I had the same aggregates, nothing more difference. There I can be a divine being or Brahma, or maybe I was in hell. But it's just 5 aggregates. So for that purpose, it's okay. But if you go to fast and then cling over there, that I was in the fast, I was such and such a person, I was beautiful over that day, this is what I did, then you actually have a defilement and then you are going into bad things. So going to fast is okay, but one has to be careful not to get wrapped up in those things. So Now the delight arises. So in the TV example or whatever thing example, you can see the delight arises. So that's how we generate the delight. You see, the delight does not come to us. We seek delight. Food does not arrive at home. We seek delight. We bring them from shops and all those things. Are we bringing whatever thing it is in the shop? No, we are bringing what is tastier, what is appealing to me. So we seek delight, so the delight arises. Now delight in feeling is clinging. If one delights in feeling, it is clinging. With is clinging as condition, being. Being means that the existence over here. Being means existence. That the same craving that I seek delight, I welcome it, remain holding to it. So the delight arises, so that delight in this particular feeling is craving. And then the craving as condition, there is this clinging. I cling to that one. I hold it thoroughly. I want it. I ate it today. I am happy. I want it tomorrow. You know. And then having got that one exists within me. It exists. It is exists within me in the sense I can reconstruct it each time I want. I just want that ingredient, that mixture, that food, that thing. You know? So, existence as conditions, the birth. So, this existence, think about the existence as this, that is like something that you collected. You eat something when you added a $10 or $1 coin to your box or something. You saw something, you had another 50 cents or whatever thing it is. So, at the end of the time, you got this box full of coins, collected for some purpose. At the time of death, you can see that I have collected this much. For what purpose? So that purpose got to come, you know, that, if I had a $1 because I ate some sort of a food, then I want to consume that food. So I want such a birth. So there will be, if you are fortunate, you get a human birth. Otherwise, maybe an animal or hell, you don't know. With birth as condition, aging and death. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair come to be. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. So that's how the whole thing come to arise. Similarly, Buddha said on hearing sounds with the ear, on smelling odors, on tasting flavors, on touching tangible with the body, on cognizing a mind object with mind. He lusts after it if it is pleasing. He dislikes it if it is unpleasing. Same thing, the now delight in feeling is clinging, with his clinging as condition, existence, with existence as condition, birth, with birth as condition, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, despair come to be, such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. And that particular part is actually a contemplation on its own, that one need to think thoroughly about that one. So ending of the round, the gradual training, here bhikkhu Tathagata appears in the world, accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of the world, incomparable leader of the persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. He declares this world with its gods, its maras and its brahmins, this generation with its recluses and brahmins, its princes and its people, which he has himself realized with direct knowledge. He teaches the Dhamma, good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing. He reveals a holy life that is utterly perfect and pure. So the Tathagata arises, and going through this this meaning of the that thing over there, Atipiso, that is about the Buddha, I mean, it take another many hours to describe that one itself. A householder or householder's son, on one born in other clan, hears that Dhamma. On hearing the Dhamma, he acquires faith in the Tathagata. Possessing that faith, he considers thus. Household life is crowded and dusty. Life gone forth is wide open. It is not easy, while living in a home, to lead the holy life, utterly perfect and pure, as polished shell. Suppose I shave off my hair and head, put on yellow robe, and go forth from the home life into homelessness. On later occasion, abandoning a small or large fortune, abandoning a small or large circle of relatives, he shaves off his head and beard, put on yellow robe, and goes forth from the home life into homelessness. Having thus gone forth and possessing the bhikkhu's training and way of life, abandoning the killing of living beings, he abstained from killing living beings. With the rod and weapon laid aside, gentle and kindly, he abides compassionate to all living beings. Abandoning taking of what is not given, he abstains from the taking what is not given. Taking only what is given, expecting only what is given, by not stealing, he abides in purity. Abandoning in celibacy, he observes celibacy. Living apart, abstaining from the vulgar practice of sexual intercourse. So these are the three things, precepts. So one would abide, that is that from the body, where it's killing and all those things, stealing, sexual misconduct, all those things. Abandoning false speech, he abstains from false speech. He speaks truth, adhere to truth. He is trustworthy and reliable, and who is no deceiver of the world, abandoning malicious speech. He abstains from malicious speech. He does not repeat elsewhere what he has heard here in order to divide those from these. Nor does he repeat to these people what he has heard elsewhere in order to divide from those. Thus, he is one who reunites those who are divided, the promoter of the friendship, who enjoys concord, rejoices in concord, delights in concord, or speak of the word that promote concord. So, I mean, you can see in the offices and everywhere that these sort of things happening, you know, having heard something, go there and tell the other people to break them apart. So malicious speech. And then the false speech, one has to avoid the false speech. And the third one is the harsh speech. Abandoning harsh speech, he abstained from harsh speech. He speaks such words as gentle, pleasing to the ear and lovable, and go to the heart, are courteous, desired by many and agreeable to many. Abandoning gossip, he abstains from gossip. He speaks at the right time, speaks what is fact, speaks on what is good, speaks on the Dhamma and the discipline. At the right time he speaks such words as are worth recording, reasonable, moderate and beneficial. So those four things, that the refrain from false speech, harsh speech, frivolous talks and slander, has to be avoided. Those are the things that we do from the, you know, the verbal things. He abstains from the injuring seeds and plants. He practices eating only one meal a day, abstaining from eating at night and outside the proper time. He abstains from dancing, singing, music and theoretical shows. He abstains from wearing garlands, smartening himself with scent and embellishing himself with ungruents. He abstains from high and large couches. He abstains from accepting gold and silver. He abstains from accepting raw grain. He abstains from accepting raw meat. He abstains from accepting women and girls. He abstains from accepting men and women slaves. He abstains from accepting goats and sheep. He abstains from accepting fowl and pigs. He abstains from accepting elephants, cattle, horses and mares. He abstains from accepting field and land. He abstains from going on errands and running messages. Monks, for example, do not take messages and go and tell the other people, even for their father or mother. And there was one instance that is the father and the mother separated, and then the bhikkhu go into the father, and father tell to the bhikkhu that your mother has separated, please go and convey this thing and ask her to come or something. A bhikkhu should not do that. So he abstained from buying and selling. He abstained from false weights, false metals and false measures. He abstained from cheating, deceiving, defrauding, trickery. He abstained from wounding, murdering, binding, brigandage, plunder and violence. So the robbery and all those things are avoided as well. He becomes content with robes to protect his body, with arms wood to maintain his stomach. And wherever he goes, he sets out taking only these with him, just as a bird, wherever it goes, flies with its wings as its only burden. So too the bird, bhikkhu, becomes content with the robes to protect his body and with arms food to maintain his stomach. And wherever he goes, he sets out taking only these with him. Possessing this aggregate of noble virtue, he experiences with himself a bliss that is blameless, because nobody is blaming a bhikkhu, you know, behaving in this way. Mm-hmm. So one would, he can experience this is called anavajja sukham in Pali, that bliss. And other people, you know, I got my car, my house and all those things, and thinking about those, and then get trouble, right? Can't go anywhere because I got this thing. I need to get my mobile, I need to get that thing and so on, right?
Isn't he gaining merits by intervening in conflict between mother and the father?
Yeah, that's why Bhikkhu is avoiding those things.
So isn't he acquiring merit by doing
it? No. Bhikkhu is born forth means that given up the mother, father and everybody else. He has no business whatsoever over there. What is his business is to attain Nibbana. And it's that merit is nothing compared to what he's trying to achieve. On seeing a form with the eye, he does not grasp at its signs and features. Since if he left the eye faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He practices the way of restraint. He guards the eye faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty. Now, this is really important. That is that when we see something from the eye, should not craft the sign and features, nimitta in Pali. If we craft the sign and the features, then the evil unwholesome state of covetousness, abhijja, abhijja domanasa in Pali. Covetousness is that really bad. That we take that this let this thing be mine. That is what is coming up for the covetousness. And if you think about that, the edible food, that this is the fourth one in that line, starting with the edible food, that the sensual desire is coming up, and then the sensual desire, and the bond of sensual desire, and then the fourth one is the covetousness about that one. So this is the root for the lust. When we get the covetousness, you can expect the ending of that one is the lust. There is no stopping. It's continuing in that. And then the domanasa, or the grief, mental displeasure, again, that leads to the hate. If I got this the grief, that means I'm in the path of this arriving at the hate. So how this is going to happen? If I unguard my eye, that means I see somebody, I'm looking at that one. So therefore I grab these signs and features. Because we have done it before many times, infinite we have been doing that one. All the things that we have constructed before now is arrived at our door of the eye as a packet. This packet is constructing the way I want. That particular person or that thing that we see, maybe yes, it just help you to arrive at your packet. That's what it is. This is completely constructed. So, then the consciousness take hold of that one and everything grows, that the dependent origination will continue with that one. So, unless we guard our eye, we get this thing, covetousness. Or else we see something we don't like and then we go in the other way around. On hearing sounds with the ear, on smelling, on odors with the nose, on tasting flavor with the tongue, on touching a tangible with the body, on cognizing a mind object with the mind, he does not grasp at its sign and features. Since if he left the mind faculty unguarded, evil unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He practices the way of its restraint. He guards the mind faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the mind faculty. Possessing this noble restraint of the faculty, he experiences with himself a bliss that is unsullied. It's called Abhyaseka Sukham in Pali. That is that it is like that my eye is not touched. It's untouched thing. My ear is not touched. So whenever it is touched, We used to let it happen, right? We all the time we let it happen because of the craving and our former practices. But try practicing this one at least for 1 hour and go to a shopping mall or somewhere. First you practice alone and then go to a shopping mall and come back in. You can see if you actually guard it this way, you're really peaceful. Your mind is so peaceful. Because then you are not looking at those people or the things here and there. You are just walking. So whoever passes does not matter because you don't see the beautiful faces or the ugly faces. All gone, right? So there's nothing for me to possess. Because as soon as I see these things, either I go to past. You know, that person knows such and such. I have seen. So why this mental rambling and all those things? What's the value of that one? It's just happening inside over here. And so either burning from the lust or burning from the hatred. Those are the two. So why would we have that one? If you...
when you are walking, even though you don't look at other things, your mind is working with something, isn't it? Otherwise, unless you think about Dhamma.
Yeah.
So your mind is working on something.
You need to have the impermanency and the, you know, the contemplation of that one. Be mindful and walking over the eye. If I open my eye and see, then I will get this trouble. Okay. Either I like it and then I go with it, I have that problem. Or I don't like it, therefore I have the anger, I get this particular trouble. So having known, if I know this, up to this extent, then I'm okay. I'm thinking that always that these enemies are there. these Buddha said village attacking dacoits over here, because they are going to attack you whatever way. So if I don't want to have that one, then if I know this particular thing, because Buddha said if you do, this is where you're going to end up, and this is the key. If you look at Kundalya Sutta, in Connected Discourses of the Buddha, and I will actually not going in the great details over here, that the Kundalya was asking Buddha why Tathagata lives for benefit of what, you know, what's the benefit, and then Buddha said it is for the true knowledge and liberation, and then he was asking what is when develop and cultivate, fulfill the knowledge and liberation. So the Buddha said seven factors of enlightenment. For the seven factors of enlightenment, we need to have the four establishment of mindfulness. And to have the mindfulness, we need the three kind of good conduct. To have the three kind of good conduct, restraint of the sense faculties. That's what we are talking about over here. If you have restraint of sense faculty, when develop and cultivate it, fulfill the three kind of good conduct. So I am refraining from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, and the lying, harsh speech, frivolous talks and slander. And then mentally, having seen something, I would not grab that, let this be mine. Or having seen someone, I wouldn't say, let this guy be dead. And I have the right view. So those three kind of good conduct is really, really important. Whenever we have the bad conduct, that means we are done with the wrong eightfold path. Good conduct going through the good way. So Buddha explained, and how Kundali is restrained of the sense faculties developed and cultivated so that it fulfills the three kind of good conduct. Here Kundali, having seen an agreeable form with the eye, bhikkhu does not long for it. Does not long for it means that I am not going to seek delight and go after it. No, I'm not welcoming it. I don't want it. No, and become excited by it. So that means that I'm overjoyed with that. On a child, for example, if you give something he likes, a toy or lolly or whatever thing, so excited about it. Likewise, that having seen a form, if we get excited about it, or generate lust for it. Since he knows that this is bad, he is not going to do that one. He is going to restrain that one.
So, Lalit, if I am walking through a shopping mall, I'm trying to understand what I should do, to do it in this way. When I see something, I should take care that I don't want it or want to move it away. Is that the idea? I should take care not to feel attraction to it, or I should think about it being impermanent,
You should prepare before the journey. Before the journey, you should know, if I go, my eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind unguarded, then those evil, unwholesome things will attack me, right? So that means I want to go in the correct path. That is the right eightfold path. So noble eightfold path. So in the noble eightfold path, you can see the second one is the right thought. That is thought of renunciation, thought of non-harming, and thought of non-malevolence. That's where my path is, right? Whenever I get the craving, the desire sort of thing, then I am going in the wrong path. So I set out my mind. I am a person. I am a traveler in this good path. I don't want to go into the other one. So my effort in this case is not to allow that to happen. That is, when I see that I get the sensual desire, do not let that sensual desire come to me. If I see something bad, let anger, the ill will thought, let that not come to arise. So I set out my condition at home while I'm going over there. Now when I go there, one has to go, let's say you are going to get food, right? So if you think about I am going on clothes shopping, then you look that way, then you are done. You can see you are already going to that, right? But if you are, let's say you are going for the buying food, so you just walk into the supermarket as it is and take your food and come back in. So since you have set out your condition before, the effort is there, not to let that come, then your mindfulness comes to arise because of the effort. From the right effort, right mindfulness. To have that right mindfulness, you should have developed it before, you know, by the meditation practice. So as soon as you are there, you are mindful, you can prevent that from happening. All these things happens only if you understand suffering. Otherwise it won't. If you do not think that there is suffering, birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, that particular path, only if you know that, then you do not look or you try to prevent it. If there is no suffering, why would I? Because I'm happy now, I can see this, I can see that one and so on. So it's the first noble truth is the main thing.
So, like sometimes when you go to the shops, like you want to buy something and then you look at other things and then...
Why would you look at the other things? That's the question you need to
ask.
That's
the craving. Like, because you pass all the things when you want to get something. So that's the craving.
That's right.
We should block it.
That's right.
Before
yeah. Because that, why would I look for other things? Because I want to have more and more craving. Right? So this one lead to, if I am actually regarding the food, if it is only for the nourishment, you know, for the maintaining of the body, not for the beautification, then I don't go.
This is the thing that we need to train the mind before we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, with this, we can, whether I could correctly understood the thing, particularly the dependent origination. When you're talking about dependent origination, the sanskar, the original form, come from the top, that is from avidya. It is that these faculties is constructed, go through that path, particularly the wrong path. But we need to have a courage or the effort to go divert from that way and get the correct path. And naturally, we are tend to go through the bad path, but we need to make lot of effort to get into the correct part. That is one example in the shopping mall and all sort of thing. Is that right?
Yeah. So how do you get rid of this avidya? Avidya is the ignorance. Is that not knowing the Four Noble Truth itself? So if someone knows the Four Noble Truth, think about the Four Noble Truth, then his construction, that the volitional formation is now changed. Previously, having seen some sort of a form, then one would grab it without knowing that this will create big problem for me. Now if I know by doing this process, what will happen to me? I get the craving, I get the clinging. Because of the clinging, there is this existence, there is this birth. So if you know that birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, only that time one can actually see, will this process lead to this hell, this path? The birth in human world is not that bad. It's not that bad. If you think about the animal realm, it is really bad. And plane of departed is really bad. If you think about the hell, that is the most suffering state. Really, really suffering over there. And we all go there. That's the problem. We have been there. We will go there if we are not careful enough. Buddha said that one for all the worlds. So if you are thinking that you are happy because I got my car, I got my family, I got these things and all okay, think about the future that you can make one mistake or two mistakes or something like that one and can go there. So so if someone knows that this is suffering, then he says avijja or the ignorance is, you know, going down. So because of that one, now he is a bit careful because he knows this iron plate is red hot. If I touch, it will burn me. So having known that one, he set out the condition that I don't want these things. That's the only way. That's the only way to get rid of this one. Otherwise, this will continue. This will continue. So what Buddha said over here, his body is steady and his mind is steady. If we are not generating the lust and if he does not long for it, and he is not becoming excited about it, then his body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. Because think about it, in the shopping mall or something, you went with something for some purpose, right? Now your mind is not even available for that task, because mind is gone for that thing and this cloth or that cloth and sort of thing, and you do not know where you are going even, right? Now here it is inwardly composed, it's completely available to you, yourself, well liberated. And so, but having seen a disagreeable form with the eye, he is not dismayed by it, not daunted, not dejected, without ill will. His body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. So similarly Buddha said about the sounds and so on. And Buddha said when he is actually doing that way, then his restraint of the sense faculties has been developed and cultivated in such a way that it fulfills the three kind of good conduct. If I'm not seeing anything, you know, in any person that I don't like to see, I don't have the anger for that particular person, right? So I'm happy. I'm it's available to me myself, and you know, it's really good thing. So this is the key. And he becomes one who acts in full awareness when going forward and returning, who acts in full awareness when looking ahead and looking away, who acts in full awareness when flexing and extending his limbs, who acts in full awareness when wearing his robes and carrying his outer robe and all, who acts in full awareness when eating, drinking, consuming food and tasting, who acts in full awareness when defecating and urinating, who acts in full awareness when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, walking up, taking and keeping silent. So every action is mindful. Possessing this aggregate of noble virtue and this noble restraint of the faculties, and possessing this noble mindfulness and full awareness, he resorts to a secluded resting place, the forest, the root of a tree, mountain, ravine, a hillside cave, a charnel ground, a jungle, thicket, an open space, heap of straw. On returning from alms round, after his meal, he sits down, folding his legs crosswise, sitting his body erect and establishing mindfulness before him, abandoning covetousness for the world. See, that's very important, abandoning covetousness for the world. He abides with mind free from covetousness. He purifies his mind from covetousness. Abandoning ill will and hatred, he abides with the mind free from ill will. Compassionate for the welfare of all living beings, he purifies his mind from ill will and hatred. Abandoning sloth and torpor, he abandoning free from sloth and torpor. Percipient of light, mindful and fully aware. So percipient of light, that if you perceive light, you know, we normally have sloth and torpor if you eat quite a lot of food and so on, or in a dark place. So if you perceive light, you can get rid of that condition. He purifies his mind from sloth and torpor. Abandoning restlessness and remorse, he abides unagitated with a mind inwardly peaceful. He purifies his mind from restlessness and remorse. Abandoning doubt, he abides having gone beyond doubts, unperplexed about wholesome states. He purifies his mind from doubt. So all these states that over here, that Buddha covers the five hindrances, sensual desire. Over here, actually, Buddha started with the one before this, covetousness, sensual desire and the ill will. And sensual desire is that there are five strands of sense pleasures, that the objects that are pleasing to our eye, those objects is not the sensual desire, the thinking about it. And the lust for that thought is the sensual desire. So the beautiful object is different, that my own thinking about is the issue. And then the ill will, that the having seen something, there is this, I get the ill will that I don't like it, so therefore I have these thoughts. And the sloth and torpor is the sickness of the mind and sickness of mental states. And the restlessness and worry, the restlessness is like a balloon put on the floor, it just float here and there, unsettled state of the mind. Worry is about the remorse over the evil that has been done. Let's say I kill an animal or I did some sort of a mistake, so I have the remorse over that one. Or the remorse over the wholesome things that I could not do, I could not achieve. Maybe that I couldn't answer a question in exam paper, so I could have done it, I couldn't do it, sort of thing. Right? And so it's in the worry state is something like that state of wondering what to do is this state. And there's this doubt about the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. So he abandoned all those things and then he purifies mind from this fire. Having thus abandoned these five hindrances, imperfections of the mind, that weak in wisdom, quite secluded from sense pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, he enters upon and abides in the first jhana. So you can see that this that the thought over here, the secluded from sensual pleasures. So while going to the shopping mall, we were saying that we have to set out our condition. If I get the sensual pleasures out of this trip, that is bad. I get this, all those bad things. And again, that whatever the unwholesome states, I might be angry, I don't want to get angry, and cruel thinking. So those thinking got to go. And so when he actually get rid of these thoughts, and he abandoned those five, the sensual desire, the ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry and doubt, five hindrances, then his mind becomes rapturous, he is happy. And so he goes into the first jhana. In the stilling of applied and sustained thought, so there is this applied thought and sustained thought in the first place. My applied thought is I apply my mind not to have sensual pleasures, not to have ill will thoughts. Whatever I set up before, that is this my effort. So I apply my mind to that one, keep on applying.
So Lali, is it correct to say that we should bear in mind that all sensual pleasures are adukkha, they lead to dukkha?
Yes, all of them, yeah. Only the ones from the mind, not associated with the sensual pleasures, taking you to the proper ones.
The mind as the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, is that the same mind? Is that the sensual mind?
Yeah, that's the mind. The sixth sense, so there.
And mental pleasures can also be dukkha?
Not every mental pleasure has to be abandoned. Because you go into the first jhana concentration, that is this the rapturous state, and thinking that the bhikkhus are abiding in this particular state, let me go and abide. If you remove that pleasure as well, there's no place for you to go. Because I'm living with sensual pleasures, I give up sensual pleasures, I don't have the rapture also, then nowhere for my mind to go and establish. So if you look at Chula Vedala Sutta, this question was asked by Visakha. Is tendency to attachment to be got rid of from every pleasurable feeling? The answer is no. Not from every pleasurable feeling. This pleasurable feeling of the jhana is allowed. So you go into that state. So Buddha said, after going there, Buddha said, this is not enough. Get rid of it. Go into the next one. So there is a gradual training over there. So the mental pressure, by contemplating impermanence and the suffering nature, getting rid of the sensual desire and things, it is allowed. It is good. And not to be got rid of at once. Later on you will get rid of that one.
What about the mental pressure you gain by
Giving dana also, it's good. When you give dana, that is, you are actually getting rid of this lobha, the last one. So you can't give something if you are holding it. You see that my food I'm giving to the monk or anyone that I'm happy to give, right? So you are actually not having the lustful thoughts over there. So the generosity, loving kindness, all those things are coming up. So therefore that pleasure is coming under good one. But if you cling into that one, then there will be some issues. So he's going to the first jhana and then he get rid of the applied thought and sustained thought, that is the vitakka vichara. It's like that fly is coming to the flower and then guy rooting around it. So maintaining it. So I want to have the non-sensual thing. That is, I don't want to have the sensual thing. I have the renunciation thinking. I maintain the renunciation thinking. Keep on maintaining the renunciation thinking. So when you do that one, then you can later on, you got this practice. Therefore, you don't really need that the sustained thought. And you still that one, then you can enter in the second jhana concentration. And then you have the rapture in the second jhana, first jhana and the second jhana, you have the rapture, right? So, rapture is sort of troublesome. It's starting from your head and it is flowing through the whole body, after a long time, you see that I'm getting troubled by that one. You know, I'm getting tired out of that one. So you would like to have the pleasure without rapture. So you reach third jhana concentration. So third jhana is really beautiful. And having reached the third jhana concentration, then one would think that I got the third jhana concentration with pleasure. Now, what happened is pleasure ceases. Whenever pleasure ceases, because the way we have tendency to attachment lies latent in that pleasurable feeling, when the pleasure ceases, I'm unhappy. You know, I'm unhappy in a certain way, because the pleasure means the cessation of the suffering part, you know, the displeasure. Pleasure ceases, displeasure comes in. Displeasure ceases, pleasure comes in, right? So, whatever the condition, that I don't want to have the pleasure, my pleasure does not cease, the displeasure does not cease, everything ceases. So, it doesn't change. Pleasure ceases and displeasure comes in, displeasure ceases, pleasure comes in. I don't want to have this change in nature. So, that is you go into the fourth jhana concentration, equanimity level. He enters upon and abides in the fourth jhana, which has neither pain nor pleasure, and purity of mindfulness due to equanimity. On seeing a form with the eye, he does not lust after it. If it is pleasing, he does not dislike it. If it is unpleasing, he abides with mindfulness of the body established. With an immeasurable mind, and he understands as it actually is the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom, wherein those evil unwholesome states cease without remainder. Having thus abandoned, favoring and opposing, whatever feeling he feels, whether pleasant or painful, neither painful nor pleasant, he does not delight in that feeling, welcomes it or remain whole into it. As he does not do so, delight in feeling ceases in him. With the cessation of his delight comes the cessation of clinging, with the cessation of clinging, cessation of pain, with the cessation of pain, cessation of birth, with the cessation of birth, aging, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. Would we get any aging if we are not going to be born? If you are not going to be born, there won't be any aging, right? If I am not getting aging, if there is no aging, would I be agitated? I won't be agitated. I would get agitated because of the aging. So not agitated, that he become, you know, so stable. And so on seeing, hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling, on odors, with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on touching a tangible with the body, on cognizing a mind object with the mind, he does not lust after it if it is pleasing. He does not dislike if it is unpleasing. With the cessation of his delight comes cessation of clinging. With the cessation of clinging, cessation of pain. With the cessation of pain, cessation of birth. With the cessation of birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. Bhikkhu, remember this deliverance in the destruction of craving as taught in brief by me. But remember the Bhikkhu Sati, son of fisherman, as caught up in a vast net of craving, in the trammel of craving. That is what the Blessed One said. The Bhikkhu was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So, this is a great discourse. It's a complete destruction of craving. And this is the only way. The last paragraph, for example, that's the only way. If someone wants to get rid of this thing, and one has to give up this clinging to these things, first the sensual things, and you are getting rewarded yourself, because you see, for me to have the pleasure, I don't need to go to shopping mall anywhere. Right, I can just close my eyes. As soon as I close my eyes, think about the Eightfold Path, straight away I have the rapture. So one can develop that you can have the happiness and all those things any time you want. So you don't need any equipment, anything to be happy. So it's just a matter of understanding the suffering, and having understood the suffering, one having understood the Nibbana is there as well, to just to give up that thing. And it is not worth going from birth to birth. It's all suffering, nothing else. Whatever the world is, there is this suffering because of the impermanent nature. Abhijja. Yeah, abhijja occurs because of this. It started with the edible food. with the edible food, and then there is this, it is fair in the foul. That's what is getting. I mean, if you leave food on a table, you can see, leave it for 7 days, it's disgusting, right? And we are also made from the same thing. And if you think edible food, if you think yourself, you are also edible food. If you give your body to a crocodile or something, you know, they will eat it, right? And the other animals, or you can see that people, human beings and other animals consume that, those things. All made of edible food. So the edible food, regarding the edible food, there is this perception, a wrong perception, really bad perception that it is fair while it is foul. And having got that one, we get three things over here. It's a packet. Perception, and there is a thought that it is fair, and then there is a view that it is fair. It's grown up to that level. So because of that one, there is this desire, sensual desire is coming up in clinging. Clinging will occur. And since there is clinging, there is this bondage. Bondage means that I'm bound to that. I'm bound to food. Therefore, I got to go to work. If there's no food, I can't survive. So I would make it up somehow to get the food, right? So I cannot escape that particular one. I go to work and earn money, take these things and so I, but while I'm earning, I'm thinking about my stomach, but I'm thinking that I will eat this and this way. I will sit down in this sort of a comfortable chair and I eat. I make my food in this way and I eat. So, we earn more and get the big houses, the small houses or whatever houses. And to get that food, I go in a car or something because my body is sort of, unable to go on its own, need to carry by a vehicle. So we make up all the things. So there is this bond of craving. Because of the bond of craving, this abhijja, this body tie of covetousness come into play. So that means it is binding to that one. And at that time I say, let this be mine. So I'm actually I'm taking that particular thing as mine. And I want to have it, possess it, and hold it.
You see Vipallasa?
The Vipallasa created this one. The perversions, that it is this fair in the foul, is the one that created this one. Okay, we sort of stop for today.